Is our economy headed for a crash? If it is, would that be such a bad thing? It turns out there are good crashes and bad crashes, according to Harold James, author of the new book, Seven Crashes, The Economic Crises That Shaped Globalization. Harold is a professor of history and international affairs at Princeton University and the author of numerous books. He joins us now to share five of his big ideas.
My name's Harold James. I teach at Princeton University. I'm an economic and financial historian. I started off working on the Great Depression. I then moved to thinking about international monetary cooperation, coordination after the Second World War. And over the past 30 years, I've been thinking about the ups and downs of globalization. My latest book, Seven Crashes, The Economic Crises That Shaped Globalization, is a contribution to that debate. I wanted to share with you the major insights of this book. First of all, our current situation, our current predicament is not unique. At the moment, many people think about the world as being deglobalized. It's falling apart. It's moving into competition between the great powers, into competing blocks. It looks like a repetition of the 1930s. Acute food shortages produce famine. Infectious diseases spread among an undernourished population. Social unrest flares up. Political systems are challenged and destroyed. And at that moment, the attention of the world focuses on particular geographic hotspots. Some dominate the geopolitical imagination, the Eastern Mediterranean, the Black Sea, the Dardanelles. That passage in particular, between the Black Sea and the Mediterranean, assumes a global significance. It's a thin needle connecting the grain-producing areas of autocratically controlled Central Eurasia to hungry or starving consumers. That sounds as if it's a description of the present, but it's also a description of particular moments in the past, a scenario that played out regularly over the past centuries, at the end of the 1840s, in the First World War, and of course after the Russian attack on Ukraine in 2022. In the 1970s, the Middle East was the focus of an intense global debate about energy security. The traumas are engendered by inadequate food or energy supplies. There are fears that they're controlled by hostile or malign or simply completely alien powers. There are challenges to the coordination of effective domestic and foreign policies. And these are the fundamental drivers. So the second of my insights is that globalization isn't a smooth process. It doesn't go continually, ever upwards. It's often interrupted, broken. At moments, we think that globalization is benefiting everybody, that the possibility of migrating offers a chance to people to escape from misery and poverty and hunger, that the chance of getting goods from long distances offers cheaper products and a better style of living, that in order to develop, countries need to import capital. And then at other moments, the discussion shifts into the reverse of that, that migration is a challenge because migrants will take away the jobs of workers or they will reduce the wages that employers offer to workers. And so there's a political pressure to crack down on migration, on immigration. Or there's a parallel feeling that imported goods are a threat to jobs, and they're also pushing down wages. And again, a pressure on governments to respond to that by tariff protection. Or the capital flows are destabilizing, and that the flows of money across borders, and it gets faster and faster and faster, the flow of money across borders produces regularly financial crises. So surely it's better to control capital, and then we live in a world that's more stable. So these visions seem to have alternated with each other, and we have moments where there's more globalization and moments when globalization looks as if it's going into reverse. And at the moment, we seem to be exactly in one of those periods in which globalization is going into reverse. And many, many famous people, prominent people will tell you that the world is deglobalizing. Larry Fink of BlackRock comes up with exactly that formulation. The world is deglobalizing after the Russia-Ukraine war. So my third contribution is to think about the particular contribution that shortages play in the development of the world. Shortages, in my account, are drivers of institutional and technical innovation. And it's shortages that lead to what are often old technologies being taken up and used in a transformative way. So I have three big examples of exactly that process. First of all, and foundational in the story, is the turning point of the middle of the 19th century. The 1840s in Europe were a moment of hunger and shortage and misery. The harvest failed. The summers were bleak, rainy. There was hardly any sun. Crops molded. And particularly where the potato was grown, the potato was hit by a fungal infection. And the result was that people who depended on the potato for their nutrients were suddenly without anything. And that pushed a crisis of government and a crisis of institutions. In the wake of the potato crisis, there's a radical rethinking of what government can and should do, and how also technology should be taken up. So the technology that's taken up at that moment is the steam engine. Matthew Boulton and James Watt developed their effective working steam engine in the 1770s. But the steam engine is used at that time just for stationary actions, for above all for taking water out of mines. And it's only applied to locomotion in the 1820s and 1830s, but then only very partially. There are short railway lines connecting individual places, but as yet no big networks. And the reaction to the shortages is to see that the steam engine, in the form of the locomotive for the railroad, and the steam engine in the form of the steamship across the oceans, can really open up the world and connect the world together. So the middle of the 19th century suddenly celebrates the steam engine as the big instrument of connectivity, of integration. And that solves the problem of shortages, at least for the moment. And in the 1850s and 1860s, the world develops really quite quickly. The second instance that I look at is the 1970s, in the aftermath of the oil crisis, two times big increases in the world oil price and shortages at the pumps, people being banned from using their cars on some days of the week, a major sense of the disintegration of institutions. But at that moment, the container ship, which was also around for a long time, there was a first container ship already in the 1930s and an individual route in the 1950s. But it's now that the container ship really comes into its own and radically reduces the cost of transportation across the oceans. And so, again, a connectivity driven by technology is going to transform the world. And finally, our own period, 2020, the outbreak of the pandemic, and the realization quite quickly that a relatively old technology developed already in the 1990s in principle, the mRNA vaccine, which had been used to treat pretty rare tropical diseases, now has a really good application. And so very, very quickly, the vaccination with the mRNA vaccines becomes widespread and enables an effective response to the COVID pandemic. In each of these cases, old technologies are taken up and are transformative. These drive globalization as well. The fourth insight of my book thinks about the way in which economists think about the process and how they react differently to shortages, to supply shocks, than they do to demand shocks. So the crises that interrupt globalization, I think, can be simply categorized as supply shocks like the 1840s or the 1970s, or demand shocks like the Great Depression or the global financial crisis that hit after 2008. And these produce very, very different responses. The demand shocks produce the sense that greater government activism is required, The master of that, who I devote a considerable amount of attention to in the book, is John Maynard Keynes, the British economist, who in 1936, in the aftermath of the Great Depression, wrote The General Theory of Employment, Interest, and Money, and really transformed the way in which economists, but also governments and voters, thought about economic processes. And after 2008, exactly that kind of thinking comes back again. So I look at the thinkers who push that kind of thinking. But there's another kind of thinking that develops in the response to shortages and to supply shocks. And that pays attention to the movement of relative prices rather than aggregate prices and looks at particular incentives. And so it's the microeconomics that come out at those moments. So the simple lesson is macroeconomics, the big vision that governments can do fiscal stimulus, comes about as a result of the demand shock. Microeconomics, responding to particular sensitivities, come about as reactions to the supply shocks. Because in the pandemic, it's not a question just of getting fiscal stimulus for everybody, but you need particular goods. You need medical equipment, masks, protective equipment, then you need vaccines. There are particular scarce goods, and you can't just create those scarce goods by putting money out indiscriminately. In the same way, after the Russian attack, there's a particular need for military goods, but you can't just get that by greater spending. And finally, then, the fifth insight of the book is that crises can be transformative in a positive sense. And in the middle of the crisis, we look at the bleak side of what's going on. We don't see the opportunities. But we should, if we want to be more hopeful, look at the lessons of the past. In the gloomy atmosphere of 1919, after the First World War, in the Peace Conference, Keynes, the great Cambridge economist, wrote that all this makes it increasingly probable that things will have to get worse before they can get better. Things will have to get worse before they can get better. There's an opportunity, a glimmer of hope there. And what I want to say in the book is that we learn most when the present is most dismal. We're exactly at such a moment. Thank you, and I hope you'll enjoy the book.
Thank you, Harold. That was Harold James with five big ideas from Seven Crashes, the Economic Crises That Shaped Globalization. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.